More than a Kieran.
gets funny every time, you slug ass bitch.
I'm in such a silly mood today.
You feel a little bit giggly today.
I do, mate. I'm on an adrenaline rush. I'm on an adrenaline rush from the weekend because my heart's still racing from a situation that occurred to me on Saturday when I was there's a park near us. It's a big field. It's got like a little kids' play park in it. And the thing that every adult fears more than anything else on earth happened to me when a group of teenage lads playing football kicked the ball and it landed at my feet and they asked me to kick it back to them.
That's like, the worst.
My entire life just flashed in front of my eyes. And I suddenly started seeing all these kind of angles and lines and trajectories and trigonometry angles, all the different ways that I could pass this back. And then I just scuffed it. It was a proper 6 out of 10 pass, but I don't think they cared too much. So it was okay. At least I didn't, you know, I got it within 3 feet of their feet. So I didn't mess it up too much, but it was absolutely blood curdling. It's terrifying.
It is absolutely terrifying when a ball comes towards you, unless you're like a pro footballer, in which case you're like, oh yeah, I can kick that ball. I think I'd just fall over. Do you remember at school when you used to play football at school on your lunch break? And I don't know if you had this, but we had like this unwritten rule where like you only played with your class, and if someone else's ball came towards you, you couldn't kick it. If like you kicked it, then someone, you end up in a fight or something. Something would kick off. Like if a ball came towards you, you just had to get out of the way.
That sounds really strange. There are a lot of gangs in your school.
The school's called Young Offenders.
No, we never had that, but we had, I always remember from school, from PE or physical education, I always remember there was one lad who was a bit like the hard lad in our school. And when we used to play football and we were in different teams and split up and stuff, he used to straight up just like tackle his own teammates to get the ball.
That kind of defies the point you're playing, doesn't it?
Well, it's a team game, but he was the team. And if you argued with him, you'd probably just get knocked out. So best not to. Do you think there's an American equivalent of like, you know, because obviously the ball coming over to you, the football, the soccer ball landing at your feet and you having to kick it back to the kids. I wonder if there's an American equivalent. I wonder if you're an American listener, get in touch and let us know if I don't know, if someone tosses you a football and it lands and you have to throw it back. Do you feel the same anxiety? Are you worried about how good your throw is? I want to know.
I would be terrified of that because a throw is going to be harder than a kick, surely.
Yeah. Well, there's a certain way as well to throw an American football. You've got to kind of get a bit of a spin on it. I know this because the odd times that I have thrown one, I've been even worse at throwing than I have kicking. So.
Wow. Well,
what have you been up to?
Yeah, speaking of adrenaline rushes, I experienced one of my own this weekend. I don't think we've talked about my spider issue since episode 1 and 2, I think.
Yeah.
Fascinating story full of ups and downs, but it came to a bit of a climax this weekend because ever since the long and short of it is, moved to an old house, there's big spiders in the house. I'm terrified of spiders. I cry a lot. And then this weekend, the whole time since we had this last big spider, I've been like psyching myself up and I've been like, you're living here now, like you've got to face this fear. So I've been telling myself, next time you see a big spider, you're not calling the wife, you're going to get it yourself. And then we were sat there on, I think it was Friday night. And then this huge spider, I don't know, it must be 3 or 4 inches. It was a big, big ass black spider. Yeah. And it came crawling across the floor and I just jumped up and screamed and was like, oh my God, big spider. So I run into the kitchen and we've got, you know, the spider catches that everyone has. And then it was almost like, I don't know, something else took over. Like, I feel like I got possessed by the spirit of some ancient warrior and I got rid of it. But that sounds pathetic, but afterwards I was absolutely buzzing because I got it and I got it in the catch and I was like, I'm going to look at it for a bit. And then we got rid of it outside and I came back in. And I was just like, yes, I've done it. So I kind of feel like, in a way, I've almost cured my phobia. I haven't cured my phobia. But then we had another one last night, but the one last night was like, you know, the cellar spiders you get? That got the really tiny body and the really long thin legs. I don't know if anyone, if they're just an English thing, or a British thing, UK thing, whatever.
No, I know the one.
But we had another one of them and that was massive as well. And I was just like, yeah, got it out. So I'm quite pleased with myself.
The thing is though, it's quite a big thing, isn't it? Because like, no matter what you're scared of, that fear, no matter what the object is or the creature is, that fear is a very real thing.
Yeah.
So you overcoming that is awesome. And I can totally see why you'd be buzzing.
Really brave?
I look down on you a little bit less. Let's just say that. No, I think it's awesome. I'm really pleased for you.
So I'm going to start a self-help book. It's just going to be one page. It just says, just catch the goddamn spider already.
I knew someone in school who was scared of strawberries. Like,
oh my God.
I think they had a genuine fear of strawberries. Can you imagine that?
That is slightly less rational, I suppose. They're both irrational fears, aren't they, really?
Yeah. And do you know, speaking of those cellar spiders, I don't like spiders either. Those cellar spiders I can handle because they've got like little joke bodies and really long legs and they always look a bit gangly and funny.
Yeah.
It's the ones that have like proper bodies that scare me.
Yeah. This one was a chonger.
But beach bods.
The one that, you know, that's been working out. It's last time he threw him out, he's been at the gym a few times and he's come back in and he's ready to reclaim the house. I also discovered I'm afraid of heights.
Oh man, this is funny. I was dying when you told me this.
I'm not really afraid of heights, but we had, again, we've been over this story loads, but I moved to the countryside and it's literally like Emmerdale here. Like everyone just knows everyone. I feel like we're living maybe 15, 20 years behind the rest of civilization, but it's great. So I get a knock on the door.
I was listening to your podcast the other week, Kieran.
On the wireless.
Totally agree about new metal. I don't know why people would speak like that in
North Manchester, in Lancashire. Yeah. Well, anyway, one of our fans knocked on the door to let me know that one of the tiles on our roof was slipping. You could just see it poking over the edge, and we live on a main road by the pavement, so the risk of death is quite real. But it was like a little bit on our side and then half on the neighbour's side because it's an end terrace. And so I knocked on their door because I thought they're always on it with like house stuff. Like if something's like not right, they usually know. So I knocked on the door and then they were like, we've got a ladder. We'll go and have a look. And then they're elderly anyway, so that he couldn't climb up the ladder because he's got a bad knee. So like, do you want to go up and have a look here? And I was like, yeah, Billy, big bollocks. I don't care. I'm a homeowner. Give me the ladder. I'll climb up and have a look. So they got it out. And obviously it's at the front of the house. We're on this busy road. Everyone knows everyone. So I imagine everyone sat at the window, you know, watching because that's the way it works around here. And then they put this ladder up and I was like, yeah, sweet. I can get up there and do this. And I got about five rungs up. I got about five rungs up and was like, nope, this is not happening. And I'm quite a big guy. And then it's quite a, you know, some of the ladders are quite flimsy. And I got about halfway up. And I was like, this is just going to buckle. So I just pretty much just went, nope, and came down. And then luckily the next door's daughter came out and she was like, I'll go up and have a look. So she just went straight up and just put it back up.
That's those rural people.
Yeah, but it was great because they were like, oh, we know this roofer called Mark. So shout out to Mark. And they're like, Mark will come out and do a good job. They rung him at like 6 o'clock on the Friday. I think he was in the pub and he was just like, yeah, I'll be there tomorrow. So he came round, knocked on the door and opened the door. And the first thing he said was, oh, you're the guy that doesn't like heights then.
Oh, man. Yeah. And obviously everyone talks to each other. So now you've got like a...
So now I'm like the city boy that's moved out to the country that doesn't like spiders and is afraid of heights. So
have you heard about Kieran who lives at number whatever it is? He can do digital files on his computer and he's terrified of spiders and heights.
He's got the internet. But yeah, it's pretty funny. Yeah, but next door, it sounds like the nicest people in the world. They're just like, oh yeah, we'll ring Mark. And then
thing is, I think that's a really good thing when people know each other. I think it's a really good thing when people know of other people who can help as well. That whole like village kind of community, I think that's an awesome thing.
It's quality. It is Emmerdale, but it's really nice. But yeah,
do you know, I had something else I remembered from the other day. After the adrenaline was still flowing from kicking the ball back to the lads, I went to the play park.
Either side.
I joined a football team. No, I went to the play park with Logan and I had the dog with me. So I couldn't go in. And it's like a little fenced area. So my wife went in and she was playing with him. And I was just stood there with the dog. And like every time someone new came into the park, I had to like talk to Kristen and Logan. I'd be like, oh yeah, well done, Logan. Or what time is it, Kristen? Just because I thought I'm just stood here with a dog just staring at a kid's playground. I didn't want to look creepy.
Want to, still did.
Well, if you did that, everyone would know about it instantly. You'd probably get people lighting torches and coming to your front door.
I know, yeah, but we just got rid of them.
They'd fix your roof first, but they would absolutely put you in a wicker man and set you on fire.
I reckon I'm only a few steps away from that. If I bodge one more DIY job, or, you know, don't climb one more ladder or whatever, then that'll be it.
You should know more about DIY, though, because your dad gave you a really useful book at the weekend, didn't he?
Yeah, so I posted it on our Instagram yesterday if anyone wants to look at the cover. But I've not seen him in 5 months. So my dad lives in Wales, which is like, they keep saying they're about 3 weeks behind us, but their lockdown was only lifted this week. So I've been texting him about, you know, when we found out you can go and sit in people's gardens with them, we texted him about going round, but obviously it's only this week they're allowed to do that. So I'm not seeing him since February. Yeah, yeah. He said when we got there, he was like, we weren't trying to put you off. I was like, I know, I understand. There is a pandemic going on. So he gave me this book called Are You Turning Into Your Dad? Which is quite a scary read when you get into it.
When he gave you it, did he give you it as a kind of like, was there anything in his eyes that kind of said either, I hope you're turning into me and I'm proud about this and this is recognizing that, or was it a kind of fearful look?
To be honest, I don't think it was either of those. The problem is like, he is like the best/worst for dad jokes. Like, they're horrendous. You know, they're both, they're hilarious and rage inducing at the same time. So you're always treading that fine line. But yeah, so he gave me this book, Are You Turning Into Your Dad? Because apparently I'm turning into my dad. I've lost all my hair like he has. And my joke's turning into his. But I found some interesting sections which you might relate to. So you know you're turning into your dad if you look forward to the weekend, because you can go to DIY merchants to buy a curtain rail and come back with a new set of furniture. I can kind of relate to that.
Yep.
You find yourself fretting about getting home in time to see the weather for the forthcoming week.
What do you mean getting home in time to see the weather? Was this like pre-internet days?
Well, to be honest, I think this book might be a little dated because there's a couple of quotes from Bill Cosby in it. Okay. Although in one of them, he's referred to as Bill Crosby, but I'm assuming it's still Bill Cosby. Otherwise, it's just a coincidence. But I'm not going to read any of them out because the less said about him, the better.
Yeah.
You can listen to radio play on Sunday morning while doing the domestic chores, which is quite frequent in our household with Smooth FM. Yeah. And then I relate to this a lot. You can wake up with a start at 7 a.m. and then have that lovely comforting feeling that you don't have to go to work. I don't think I can sleep past 8 anyway.
Yeah.
I've got another couple of sections as well. What are they? Oh, harumphing, because this is real. And I bet you do this. Harumphing. The classic harumph is a cross between a growl and a sigh and has many purposes. It's most commonly used when sitting down on or standing up from the sofa or armchair. Yeah. A weary exhalation that signifies either relief at having just completed some dull domestic chore or mild irritation at the prospect of attempting one, followed by a Bill Crosby quote, which I won't read.
I totally do that.
And it's like really that. Bad because like I know that I do that. I know that I do that.
It's funny what you don't hear though, isn't it? Like the other night, Kristen told me that I grunt when I eat. So apparently I just sit there and I'm like eating. I'm like, I hope I wasn't doing that at the park the other day.
I know you don't have a Greg sausage roll with you or anything, did you? Stood there with the dog grunting.
I can relate to all that. Yeah,
there was another one. Where were we about going on holiday as well? You buy at least 3 guidebooks to the place you're visiting and bore the rest of the family by pointing out inconsistencies you find between them, which is kind of true. I do this with Claire, but rather than buying a book, I just sit and watch people's holiday videos on YouTube. She's just like, I don't want to watch these. We're going to be going in a couple of weeks. Why are you watching like where we're going? We went to Florida. I used to spend hours doing it. She was like, just you're ruining the holiday. Just enjoy it when you get there.
I do that. I'm a proper researcher, like, but it does kill some of the spontaneity. I remember when before we went to Centre Parks for the first time, I watched loads of videos.
Yeah.
Probably hours of videos. And then by the time we got there, I felt like I'd already been.
So really, if you think about it, you can save a lot of money just by watching YouTube videos of people's holidays.
Yeah, I think I might start doing that. It's going to work out for the better. I did, we were talking last week about going to the pub. I actually did go to the pub on Sunday.
Nice.
Yeah, went for a bit of food. It was weird, but in a kind of in a way that it never felt strange.
Mm.
Don't know, just kind of felt normal. It, that normality was kind of broken a little bit by the manager wearing like a big plastic visor over his face that made everything feel like a very low budget version of Aliens.
Yeah. You're trying to have a pint and you feel like you're in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah. It was nice though. It was nice to sit in a pub and have a beer. So yeah,
we've still not been over the road, but we will do it at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah. Gotta get your reputation back on track first.
Oh god, yeah.
You're gonna walk in, it's gonna be like a Wild West movie. Everyone just goes quiet.
Yeah, better not sip on 3 pints then pass out. I'm not drunk.
Then the bartender whispers to some guy at the bar, "It's the city boy."
Yeah, everyone darts away and you see like all the chairs spinning and stuff.
Do you know that did actually happen to me once in real life? I was in I think it's one of the first times I visited. So my wife is from South Carolina and she now lives here in Manchester, has done for 14 years now. Mm. And I met her when I was at the University of South Carolina and I was studying there for a bit. And the first time I went to, I think it was the first or second time I went to her house, which is in a very, very rural place in South Carolina. There's a little kind of gas station nearby that's also a cafe. And I remember walking in there and there's a dude like polishing a shotgun on the front porch. Like, honestly, it's just proper, just, yeah. Crazy to me. And I walked in and the three guys drinking their coffee at the little bar just all kind of sat their cups down at the same time, just looked at me.
Oh god.
And that was when I realized that I was welcome.
Were you on your own?
Yeah. She was in the car, but yeah, I mean, to be fair, the people there are really, really friendly. But
did you do that thing where you just push your jacket to one side to show your pistol and your holster and everyone's like, "Whoa, easy, easy."
Yeah, we don't want no trouble, mister. It was just like that.
And you're like, could I just use the toilet, please? I'm on the way through.
Yeah. But enough of our shenanigans, because we have a guest to introduce, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. I reckon this is one of the best episodes we've done, if only just because of the amount of shit that we started chatting.
Yeah, I think every episode is the best we've done, but there's only a marginal increase in quality, if there is one.
Yeah, and a massive decrease in following.
It's going up, it's fine, we're okay.
Yeah, yeah. We spoke to Dan from Conjurer, who are just a sick band and a really, really cool, really nice guy. And I think I mainly just wanted to ask him about Peep Show, to be fair.
Yeah, they've got a split album, haven't they, with Pine called... Curse These Metal Hands, which is a Peep Show quote, and there's definite links to Peep Show in other stuff as well.
Yeah, which I said in the interview to him as well, I felt like I was brown nosing a little bit, but that album is unbelievable, like front to back, genius. And especially considering he said that, you know, they hadn't got together and had a jam or anything, they just kind of met up in a rehearsal room and started hashing it out. Amazing record.
I think to me that's the most amazing thing, like to be told, oh, someone wants to do a collaboration album with you, and to go and meet that other band and not even know each other and not even have said hello to each other, and then just be able to turn out an album that sounds that good.
Yeah.
Crack, absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, yeah. So, we'll crack on with it.
I was just going to say, he also talked quite a bit about the new album, and we also talked about our mutual appreciation of pop music. So that's something to look forward to.
Yeah. Sweet. Well, here's Dan Nightingale from Conjurer on Too Old for This Pit. Welcome to Two Off This Pit, episode 7. Today, we're really excited to be joined by a guest who is part of a band who are one of the most exciting bands currently in the UK metal scene.
Yeah, we've got with us Dan Nightingale from Conjurer. Dan, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you?
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Just all right.
That's as much as we can muster in these days.
Yeah. Well, we're sat waiting for the pub to open.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were just saying earlier, actually, Kieran lives opposite, like, not even, like, probably, what, 20 feet away? The pub opposite your house?
Yeah, it's probably more than 20 feet, but it's it doesn't take very long to get there. You don't need to get a taxi home.
You're just looking outside the window, your hand on the window pane, just sad music plays.
Yeah, well, yeah. We were discussing whether, if it was a Wetherspoons, whether I'd be able to go on the app and get a pint delivered to my front door. I thought that'd be great if we could, but maybe we're not there yet.
How's it been for you, Dan?
Fine, really, to be honest. I mean, I've been at work like since lockdown, so things haven't really changed that much. Right. I work with my dad at like the family business, which is a motorbike shop, and
you're
allowed to do online orders and stuff. We were just like, right, we'll shut the whole shop down, and it was just me and him for like 10 weeks or whatever it was until everyone came back, and it was great. Just had a like, little Bluetooth speaker, we were just blasting music, getting KFC dinners. The best time I've had at work, so yeah, I've been all right.
Wow. That does sounds all right, yeah.
I was going to say, how obviously lockdown happened in March, didn't it? How has that impacted Conjure as a whole? I mean, obviously, are you working on the new album?
So it impacted us in quite a scary way, in that we were on tour. We just started a tour with Carbomb and Frostbit, and just before it, there was all the rumblings of like, oh, apparently it's now in the UK, Italy's bad, things like that. And so there was talk of like, oh, well, I'm guessing the Milan date won't go ahead. And then there were talks of other dates like Leipzig falling through, and certain venues bringing the cap down to like 100, sometimes even 50. And we'll be fine. So... 4 days, the first 4 days were all in Germany, and then we were hitting like Budapest and shit like that. And I've always wanted to go. And just every single day it was, oh, apparently this place might cave. And so we were enjoying the gigs that we had, but it just became more and more apparent as they went on. Shit was getting really serious. And then we woke up on the fifth day, the morning of the fifth gig. I slept in the van. Everyone else stayed in a hostel. I went upstairs to their room to check on everyone. Connor opens the door and is like, we're going home. Everything's, travel bans, flight bans and stuff. And because Carbomb are American, there was this thing Trump enforced, like no one from Europe could fly over to America. So they were like, we need to get out of Europe, get to the UK and get home as soon as possible. So it was immediately, every show was stopped. And like, we were good. But it was like, well, we'd rather be home and safe than anything else. And, we wake up, get in the van and just, right, let's go home. So we're driving home, and every now and then, if we have to stop for fuel or piss break or whatever, newspapers with the picture of coronavirus on the front of it, and you just started to feel the atmosphere settle in, people getting scared, like people in queues all of a sudden kind of distancing from one another, and it was like, this is fucking real now. Like, I'm not proud to admit, there was all the stuff at the beginning of, the flu's apparently worse and things like that, so for a long time, a lot of people all over the world were just like, it'll be okay, it'll be fine. And then all of a sudden it sets in, you're like, get me home.
Yeah. We started this podcast like, it was just after, wasn't it? Just after everything started. So like every band that we've had on obviously has been impacted by this. When we had, when we're talking to 4 Years Strong, they were talking about they'd released their album. Was it like a week or something?
They were like
8 dates into a massive world tour, and they were just like, "Oh, we're not doing that anymore." So yeah, it's crap.
Yeah. I remember as well, like when there was the one case that was over here, the first UK confirmed case, And then, like you say, all of a sudden it was like that. Just all of a sudden it was locked down, it was carnage. But it's really, really seems to be impacting musicians. Well, obviously, understandably, it's impacting them really badly. I mean, they're saying it's probably 2021 now, isn't it, before anyone's going to get back to any kind of normality with gigs.
Oh, yeah, if we're lucky. I mean, I saw the day Black Dahlia had put a tour together for January next year. That's wishful thinking. But I mean, like, we're really lucky in that Car Bomb tour I mentioned, that was going to be our last thing for the entire Maya album cycle.
Right.
The thing was, we were going to spend, the whole thing was going to be, we're going to spend the entire year off and just write and write and write. And then it was, we just kept getting like festival offers and stuff like that. And it's like, well, we can do them and then go back to writing and stuff. But if anything, it has taken this virus to, you know, it's not necessarily a positive. Obviously, I'd much rather it not happen, but it kind of took the virus to literally make us stop.
Mm.
So we have just kind of gone, yeah, let's definitely write an album now. And like, we're about halfway into that, maybe just over halfway. Me and Connor have started demoing songs now, like, because put everything up in Guitar Pro and then like just to throw things back and forth to one another and go, oh, does this verse work? Does this chorus work? Blah, blah, blah. Mm. And then we kind of agree on a draft, then it's like, right, let's get to demoing it. So yeah, we kind of go through several different processes. Like, we're not a jam band. We're not very good at just getting in a room. Like, especially if it's like, oh, we've got 3 hours. We've just run through the set. Right. We've got 45 minutes to try and come up with a song. Like, so yeah, we just do everything from the comfort of our own home. And like, it's better because you don't have the time restrictions.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm dying to get back into a practice room and just play guitar loud, because it's just playing a loud guitar on your own's fine, but like, I want all the other guys.
Yeah. 2 meters away from you.
Yeah.
So the second album, I'm sure you can't kind of, I don't know if you can talk about it too much, but how different to Maya do you think that will end up being? Is it going to be a familiar sound from the first album, or are things heading in a slightly different direction this time?
It's really hard to tell, like, because I mean, when we did Maya, I was a little bit anxious about the songs not being cohesive. I thought they were all kind of like, are these even going to fit together? And then it came out and people were like, yeah, it's fine, don't worry.
Yeah, definitely. That's one of the things that I like about it, it really does feel like one kind of, you know, big body of work.
Yeah, I'm really glad, because like, now I look back and think, well, why was I so anxious about it? But I think this is the thing, like, asking bands about their own art and what they kind of view of it is a very, very strange thing, because obviously we don't get the audience perspective and stuff. Mm. And like, it's always lovely when people do talk about how the music makes them feel and what they think about it and stuff. And but then all you'll remember is like the first draft of the song where the lyrics were like complete gobbledygook or something. You're like, how can anyone relate to that? But now with the new stuff, it's I don't think it's like wildly different. I don't think it's gonna like ruffle any feathers or anything, but at the same time, there are definitely influences coming in from other realms. Sounds really pretentious, but like, there's a lot of in terms of like melodies and stuff, I'm really influenced by Eastern European folk music and stuff.
Okay, cool.
So there's a lot of that kind of, there's a really desperate feeling to the music. It's really like, like gone a bit tragic and dramatic in places, but like, nah, it's still heavy, it's still, you know, guns blazing and stuff, but there's just things thrown in there that beforehand, we probably would have gone, nah, it doesn't really fit. I think it's the thing we always want to, we always want to get to the point where we look at all the songs and, like I said about Maya, kind of go, how are these going to all fit together? Like, yeah. I think it'd be boring if a band looked at their work and it's just kind of like, yeah, bang, 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 bang. It's just kind of like, well, the listener's just kind of going to be on one level throughout the whole thing. We just want to be a little bit more dynamic, really. Like, as much as pummeling stuff is great, like, just want to try different things here and there. You know, we're not going to come out with a reggae album or anything.
But. Oh, man, I'd be up for that.
I'd be quite impressed, to be fair. Do you feel any pressure for album number two? Because obviously the first album is, I mean, it's a really impressive album. It's a really refined album. To me, it doesn't sound like a debut album.
No.
Do you feel pressure to live up to the first one, or are you quite kind of relaxed about it?
It kind of changes. I mean, we've always kind of said to ourselves that the only pressure we would and should feel come from us. Mm. Like, we're not worried about necessarily what other people will think. It's just like, at the end of the day, obviously it'd be great if people really liked it, but for us it's more about, you know, I mean, we're the people writing it, we're the people that have gone to live with it. If someone doesn't like it, then that's it. It's done for them. But like, we just want to have something that interests us and stuff that we want to play live and end up feeling differently about. Because the thing I've loved about playing live so extensively, because it's the most any of us have ever played, like, all this, we were in like covers bands and just local bands and stuff like this, so this is the first instance of, oh shit, people get it. But the great thing about playing live so much is all the songs you have, they're never the same. Like, every gig you play them, you'll have different favorites on one tour, favorites on another tour. You just, your music is constantly under the microscope, not only from the people you're playing to, but from yourselves. And they just kind of, the songs take on a different light in a sense. Like, there are songs that I've not been that big on that I've come to really appreciate certain sections of and things like that. And
yeah,
it's the same. Like, this is the thing. Like, we always try and write music that all of us absolutely love, but there's always going to be one person who doesn't like this song as much as the other three and things like that. And that's totally fine. Like, I don't think bands should necessarily be ashamed of admitting anything like that. It's just the way of things, like, especially with us. Like, it's so hard for all of us to agree on stuff. But
do you find that that's good, though? Because it must be, I'm sure there's bands out there who just crank out the same old stuff because everyone does agree, whereas if you've got, you know, if there's a bit of bartering or a bit of negotiation with people, and people are bringing different ideas and being honest about what they do and don't like, I imagine that just must be so much better.
Yeah, I mean, when you're like really, really into, say I'm in the middle of writing a song, I'm really, really into it, there is always a bit of anxiety of like, oh, I really don't want to show this to the guy. They hate it. Like, if I just keep it to myself, it'll be a 10 out of 10 song. But as soon as it goes to them, it'll be a 5. But like, no, Brady was saying yesterday, because he's been in the States like this entire lockdown. He got back like 3 weeks ago. And we all just like convened at his house and distanced and everything. And we always get kind of stressed out. Like, we have a saying, it's the classic 3 out of 4. Like, the most amount of members of the band that will all agree to one thing is 3. There's always one person who's just like, shit. But he was saying, like, it means that when it is a 4 out of 4, it's sick. Like, whatever it is we agree on, we're all like super, super stoked on. And I think that's why it's very rare that, you know, we can cobble any old set together and no one really complains. Like, if they do, it'll just be that week or that day they just don't want to play this certain song. It's just, oh, that's just what that comes with the territory. But yeah, like, album 2 is coming on well. We don't feel any pressure from anyone else, not even from a label or anything. It's purely just, well, we don't want to write Maya Part 2.
Yeah.
But we don't want to, you know, as I say, we're not going to go crazy left field or anything. Like, we know what it is about Maya we really like, and we know what it is about Maya we want to improve on. So just kind of, you know, while
we had you're actually the second Dan in a row that we've had on the podcast, because last week we had Dan Franklin on, author of Heavy.
Yeah.
It was a lot of positive things to obviously contribute to the whole discussion around Maya, and that was a really cool chat. He was excited that you were coming on next.
Yeah, it was amazing getting that, like, getting the book through the post and just being like, oh my god. Yeah. An actual book. And like, I talked to one of my journalist friends, and she was like, oh, what publisher is it? And I mentioned it to her, and she was like, oh shit, you're big news. And I've got a little bookmark where my few paragraphs are, and I'm just like,
yeah. Well, it was interesting for me, because for both of us reading it, because you know, we obviously both listened to Maya, and it's, you know, we know the songs, but it's often harder to find the meaning behind the songs or the creation of the songs. And there's the bit in the book where Dan's talking about the actual title track and it being based on a 14th century poem, and this whole thing of, again, this sounds as dramatic as the music, but you looking out of a window and seeing a lonely tree on a kind of desolate landscape, which I'm sure actually isn't what happened, because I make it sound stupid, but you could probably correct that.
Well, I was around Brady's one time and was staying like in his spare room, and literally just like woke up from a bed, and as soon as like I looked out the window, like there's just this on the horizon, a hill, one lonely tree, and it was just like, oh. Really desperate and bleak. And like, me and Brady chatted about this recently, like in terms of inspiration, like obviously Gojira are very like nature based and they sing a lot about nature and stuff, and like they're not like that, but there is something about the land and English history and folklore and stuff that I just feel really, really tied to, in terms of, you know, government and people, and so they can all fuck off, but like the land, like I just love England as a country. And so finding out about, you know, all the kind of folklore, and as you say, 14th century poems, and they were, that whole poem, it wasn't even necessarily how like we write songs. It was a warning. It was kind of like a lot of tapestries and stuff weren't necessarily, they were painted as being stories and tales and fables and stuff, but they were all warnings and things, like parts of the Bible, like it's kind of a warning, it's a guideline of how to live your life and stuff like that. And I just found it interesting, the idea that, because you, when you're in school, it's just like, if you're bad you go to hell, if you're good you go to heaven, but this poem I stumbled across was so much more like, I know, in depth and kind of fantastical. And yeah, I always wanted to kind of delve into like more black metal-y kind of stuff, but someone who really doesn't dig, you know, the classic second wave stuff of like Dark Throne and all that, it was like, well, I want to evoke that kind of atmosphere that those bands have while not doing what they do. And it was just a little, that song was kind of an experiment in a way, because it was like, here's this like fantastic folklore thing I found from the 14th century, and now I'm going to write some lyrics to it. Black metal, even though I really don't like black metal.
I think it does. Yeah. It stands well on its own, though. I mean, even if you kind of don't know the backstory, but when I read that, and Dan writes about, you know, this kind of trapped soul, this person that doesn't know that they're dead, kind of wandering the landscape. Yeah. I think that was like the last chapter I read before I went to bed that night, and I was like, fuck.
Wide awake.
Yeah, man.
That's what I like, though. I like all that kind of, like, because on paper it can sound really cheesy and ridiculous and stuff, but I just love, like, I mean, Hadal is just about how deep the sea can be. Like, yeah. No, it's not clever stuff. It's just stuff that we kind of talk to each other about and go, wow. let's write a song about that. Like, it's, yeah. That's kind of, you know, that's why I sat there thinking these songs aren't going to work together. Because it's like one here is about trapped souls, one here is about the sea, one here is about mental health, one here is about Amy Winehouse. It's just,
yeah.
Like, how does this all work? But glad it did.
Yeah, I've got, I remember when I was kind of, when we were like prepping for this chat, and I was making some notes, and I was just really listening to everything again, because it had been a little bit, and I wrote down a little note here that just said, I don't know if anyone's ever told you this, but the breakdown in Wretch makes me want to go outside in the garden in the rain, smear mud under my eyes, and then punch the fence with my bare hands until there's nothing left of it.
That's kind of a lyric in itself.
that's from my upcoming album/memoir.
We'll sell that to you for album number two. You can have that.
But that's genuinely, like, I remember the first time I heard that. Obviously, there's points in an album that stick out, but that breakdown in Wretch, like, even to this day, I listen to it and it's like, God, the power in that. It's just, it's mind-blowing. It's so good.
Yeah. I was watching the video for that before, and I've not seen that before. I didn't realise it was a 360 video.
Oh, yeah.
So it looks like just your rehearsal room. I'm assuming that's where you rehearse, or...
Yeah, that's where we rehearsed in Coventry. I can't remember how it did come about. The thing is, like, we did the Maya music video first, and like that, you know, we wanted to do, like, I don't necessarily write scripts as such, but I write kind of treatments and like, oh, this to happen and this to happen, and it's like, well, we've only got 500 quid, and you're like. But I can't remember how the Wretch one came about. I think it was just Holy Roar just kind of like, we want another music video. And it's like, what can we do? And Wretch is such, I mean, the song kind of is the video. It's just there's nothing to it. It's just it's just in the music room screaming about how things can be shit sometimes and just getting it out that way. And yeah, I think Connor or Brady must have just gone, fuck it, let's do one of them 360 things, because
yeah,
why not? They need a music video. Like, if there was any kind of setting that would probably work best for this song, it would just be us blaring out in a practice room. So one practice, we just set it up in the middle and just had a way at it, and it's great. I think it's pretty cool. It's kind of gimmicky, but like I like it. I like just kind of focusing the camera on Connor and just having a chuckle, and then focusing it on Jan and having a chuckle, and then focusing it on me and I'm definitely not playing the right thing there. But yeah, it's neat. I think it's all right.
You're a Kieran wanted to ask actually something about Holy Roar and a certain line of t-shirts.
Yeah, well, more about, I feel like, and I'm sorry because you must get asked about this all the time, but I feel like we need to have a discussion about Peep Show. And I don't know if that makes your heart sink, because I imagine everyone must ask you this all the time.
No.
But yeah, so I remember, I think it was 2000 Trees Festival, 2018, and I remember just seeing these Holy Roar Peep Show t-shirts everywhere. The black and white ones with super hands on and stuff. And then obviously you've got the Curses Metal Hands, so... Do you just only generally work with people who are into Peep Show, or is it just coincidence?
It's kind of like, if someone doesn't like it or doesn't get the references, we don't talk to those people.
Right.
No, it was just like, it was purely, again, like, we like to make out that we have these grand ideas and stuff like that, but we're just idiots. We're just absolute idiots. And the whole thing with Kirsties was just... A Holy Roar wanted to like do a team up slash battle thing with Big Three Monsters, and they wanted to have like band from one roster, band from another roster come together and like either do splits or collaborations and things like that. And it was all going to be like, they was essentially going to hijack a stage at Arcton Gent, I think it was. And they messaged us through and they were like, yeah, we've asked, you know, Pine to do it, but the bands that they asked, none of them agreed to it. So they were like, yeah, do you guys just want to do it? And we were like, yeah, go on then.
How do you even approach something like that? Because obviously, you know, it's one thing if it was, you know, I don't know, verse, chorus, 3.5 minute long, done. It's quite an intricate piece of work. So how did you approach the writing process? Was there someone taking the lead, or was it?
Well, I was very skeptical because, like, the only other time I've ever gotten in a practice room with anyone with no material, nothing, like not even playing with the guys or knowing them before, it was before Kundra. I just went to a practice room in Coventry with these guys. And I remember beforehand being like, I don't want to come into the practice room without bringing anything, yeah, like without having a riff or something. And so I approached the whole thing. I was kind of like, who's going to write? Like, how are we assigning roles? Who's going to play what? We've agreed to the thing. And like, I agreed to it. I was like, I'm willing to give it a go, but was just kind of like, I would not be surprised if it fell flat on its ass.
Because it's got to be tricky as well, you know, combining two bands. You know, you've probably got used to the way that you guys write, you know, in Conjura, but then to integrate another band, I suppose you're going to have to find a compromise on both of your writing styles.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, these were all like big questions that we were like, oh, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I just remember, the Pine guys came down to our practice space in Coventry, and it was just like, you know, Nick sat behind the drum kit, Jan's at like the keyboard, and the rest of us all kind of set up and were like, cool, what now? And for years I had this little like acoustic thing that I would just fiddle around with if I, you know, sat around the house or whatever. And that's the intro to High Spirits. I remember sending it to the guys and they were just like, oh, that's really pretty. That's really nice. And then after that, it was just kind of like me and Jan sat and just thought, oh, we can go heavy here. We can do this. It can do that. Mm. And thing we know, we've got like a 9-minute song. And it wasn't like set in stone. There's stuff about it that changed as soon as we got to the practice room because... Mm. Once Nick was like the definitive drummer, Jan was like, well, okay, I'll sit this one out. And we just got to playing that. And it was like, it wasn't, you know, too much to wrap your head around. Like some Kundra stuff, it is just like some of the things Jan writes, you just like, my fingers can't physically do that. But it was just dead simple. It's like really straightforward, but just goes a bunch of different places. And once we jammed that a few times, we were just like, yeah, we're like really happy with this, we're really chuffed with it, like we got something here. And once we started writing other bits and bobs for it, it was just kind of like, let's stick down this kind of really happy melodic route. Like this is stuff that neither of our day job bands could get away with. Having tons of fun with it. Like, it was always just so much fun, not even just playing with those guys, but hanging out with them. Because like after practice, like we'd go out for drinks and stuff and just have a lot and get to know them. Like barely really knew them when they came to the first practice session, but just after every practice, after every booze up, after every like the guys' floors and stuff, we just became really, really good mates. And the whole thing just became this really, really positive atmosphere. And that just totally seeped into the music and the artwork. And it was just like, oh, what should we do it? And I remember always saying that Kirsty's Metal Hands was the coolest peep show band name because it just sounded so cool. And was like, I wouldn't be against that. And so it just stuck. And I'm like, oh God, is this going to turn into a massive joke? And I was really dreading it turning into a massive joke. But now it is one and I love it.
So you didn't go with Danny Dyer's Chocolate Homunculus then?
It was in the hat.
It probably wouldn't have fit on the cover, to be fair.
Yeah. It's quite cool that you didn't know each other as well.
Like, yeah, I was just going to say that's like a really cool kind of aspect to it. I mean, I'll hold my hands up because I didn't actually hear that until quite recently. I mean, I knew it existed. I just, for some reason, never got around to listening to it, but one of the best albums or collections of songs that I've ever heard. It's so good, front to back. Absolutely love it.
Thanks, man.
It's really, obviously, like you said, it's kind of, it must be nice, not that you're kind of tied to your sound, because obviously kind of do what you want. But it must be kind of really liberating to go in with people that you don't know, with no music, and just kind of see what happens. Like, I wonder what it would have been like if you had known each other quite well, like if you had prepared with stuff. Would you have maybe written stuff that was more to the other person's liking? Like, it's really fascinating.
Yeah, it's like, it's a pretty mad, I mean, me and Brady sometimes chat to each other, just like, this whole country thing's a bit mad, isn't it? Like, it's gone a bit way further than we ever expected. And then, like, when the Kirsties thing came along, again, it was like, okay, we'll give it a go. I'm not sure it'll work. And then it's like, oh, it does work. Oh, this is cool. And the whole thing was that it would just be a set of Arct and Gent, and that would it'd be over. And then I remember when we were playing and we were quite drunk. and just looking out into the crowd, I saw Alex from Holy Raw just like with his little cap on, like nodding his head, smiling away. And it was very soon after, I think he mentioned to Brady, just like, you've got to record that. You've got to go into the studio with it.
Yeah.
And it was quite a rush to get the album done because we were doing it just before our first American tour. So like in just a month or so before that. So it was a lot of, you know, drive up to Manchester for one day, do your vocals, drive back, pack to get ready for the tour, and America mixing it while we're over there. And like Joe's in the studio just sending like, oh, we'll put like a gong on it. What do you reckon? We go, yeah. it was just a super new, super weird, but ultimately really, really gratifying experience. And like, it's really nice now that it's a band. It's not a one-off thing. It's not a project. It's like, it feels like a band to us. I mean, like, I think it was just before lockdown, actually, I'd got a new song written that's got freaking banjo and stand-up bass in it and 12-string guitar. Like, just got full out. And, like, writing a script for a music video for it and all that. And it's just, like, it's just such a breath of fresh air. Like, I love writing for Kundra and stuff, but the headspace that we're in when we write, because it's kind of, it can be bleak music at the time, it is of like,
see, I wasn't expecting that because I obviously had heard Meyer, and I think it was you, Kieran, who messaged me and was like, you got to listen to this. It's great. And I'd seen it on there, and I popped it on, and I was thinking, oh yeah, man. I hadn't heard Pine, but I was thinking, this is gonna be absolutely, you know, I imagine it'll still kind of have that trademark sound.
This is gonna slap. That's what you thought.
Yeah, honestly, I thought it was just gonna, you know, and it does go off, but it goes off in a different way. But I was walking my dog the first time I heard it. It was about 6 a.m, and I put it on. I was like, right, I need to wake up, get something going in my ears. And when High Spirits first hits, and the sun was rising, and it was already a nice day, and it was like, oh man, like it fit perfectly with what was happening at that moment. And I was like, this is really different. But yeah, just dug it from the get-go.
Is that a tear coming down your eye, Graham?
Yeah, it's a tiny little one. It's the same one that goes down yours when you look at the pub.
When I see them opening the windows and open the doors.
Yeah.
It's good fun. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
And you did, you also did a covers split EP, didn't you, with Palm Reader, and you covered Blood and Thunder by Mastodon and Vermilion by Slipknot. Was there, yeah, I mean, both cracking songs that I love, but was there a reason that you wanted to pick those?
Well, Blood and Thunder was when we were first getting together, before we even had a bassist, and, you know, we had like four, maybe five songs. It was just kind of like, as most bands, when they start out, they cover something, they throw a couple of things in the practice room and just see how they get on with them. And the thing we've always done when approaching covers is pick a song that we really, really like. You think it's a brilliant song, and obviously Blood and Thunder is brilliant, but there are things about it that we've thought, oh, I wish they did that. So we just go, oh, we'll do it then. And yeah, Blood and Thunder was just one of those songs that we were playing in the practice room like in fucking 2014, however long ago it was. And when it came to doing longer sets and eventually doing headline sets and stuff, it was just like, we've only got 11 songs. And like, so if someone was like, right, we need an hour and a quarter, it was like, Blood and Thunder then. So yeah. Kind of chuck it in. And like, I've always loved that song, and just, we would play it sporadically. As I say, like if we had a long set, it was like, yeah, chuck that in. Or sometimes if we finish a set and the crowd are calling out for another song, you go, yeah, cool, Blood and Thunder then.
Yeah, nice.
It just became this long-running thing. It was like the only cover we did. And eventually, when we were talking about doing like a split covers thing, we did the Vermillion one before, and that was for Metal Hammer CD. And we're really chuffed with it, really liked how it came out. And when the idea of a covers EP came together, it's like, right, we'll do that and Blood and Thunder. And yeah, it just came out pretty well. Like, I'm pretty happy with it. And then obviously Palm Reader came on. Like, my favourite thing about that covers EP is their Palm Reader's cover of Thrice. I think it's amazing. Like,
yeah.
I'm so glad we did it just so I could get that song, like, put it on, I was just like, right, skip 1, 2, and 3 and just listen to track 4 over and over and over. That was just a little, it was meant to be just kind of a little Christmassy thing, just a little bonus thing, really. As I say, we had Vermillion lying about, and I think we did Blood and Thunder at the same time, because with the time we booked in the studio, it was like, oh, we may as well bash out Blood and Thunder. And so that's how our side of it came together. And then it was just about finding another band to do two other covers. And we've been chummy with Palm Reader for ages. Like, they're one of those bands that the first time we ever played with them, it was just like, yeah, we're going to be pretty chummy for the rest of the thing. Those guys, they're class. And they're just really, really hardworking, really, really good dudes. And yeah. So... yeah, when they came together, it was just, and then it got released on the, when Boris got elected, and then it was like, well, today's shit, but
yeah. Oh well,
Blood and Thunder.
Slipknot cover if you want it.
Yeah. I do like that you chose Slipknot though, because I imagine, well, I know because you see it in lots of different kind of groups and different bits around the internet. There's obviously a lot of, you know, I think Slipknot are one of those, they're a band that me and Kieran personally love, but I think, especially if you're in kind of, you know, bands that are much heavier than them or in different kind of scenes in metal or genres within metal, you know, they're kind of, there's a lot of looking down on bands that are big like that. So it's nice to see kind of, you know, a band that is yourself, like, it's completely different to what Slipknot sound like, kind of doing something that is by a big band rather than a, you know, a smaller band.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, like, the thing is, we've all been there. Like, you know, I was at school and Slipknot release All Hope Is Gone, and you're like, oh no, rubbish. Like, but I don't know, the older you get, and the thing with us, like, is like, there's very few bands that we all absolutely love, and Slipknot is one of them, and System of a Down is one of them. So yeah. When these, you know, we'd get emails through of Metal Hammer saying, oh, they're doing like one of those cover CDs for a certain band. Like, do you want to do it? It was, we were always gunning for either a Slipknot or a System of a Down one. And yeah, eventually we got the Slipknot one, and discussing which song to do again, it was this thing of, well, what's a song that kind of suits us the most. And I've always loved Vermillion. I think it's an amazing song.
Yeah.
It's always like, as a kid first hearing it, everything you heard before was always just did it kind of stuff.
And yeah. Volume 3 is so good.
I remember seeing Slipknot tour Volume 3 and Mastodon were supporting.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And somehow I managed to get on the front row in it. Oh, it was immense. But I hadn't listened to Mastodon at that point, and I remember them finishing with Blood and Thunder, and I remember that riff just sticking in my head. That's good. One of the greatest riffs of all time. That, it's so good.
It is. I remember buying that on I moved to America for a year to do like an exchange study thing, and I was at the University of South Carolina for a year, and there was a little music shop in Columbia, and I remember walking there and buying Leviathan on CD. God, this is I think there's an age gap here. And you said as well that All Hope Is Gone came out when you're in school. I think Slipknot first album came out when I was in school.
Listening to it on the wireless.
we used to get the order.
Well, on the penny farthing.
I got a telegram that the new album had come out, and cracked it on the gramophone.
I'm incredibly jealous of the Slipknot Mastodon show. That's insane.
Well, it was Mastodon, Hatebreed, Slayer, what? Slipknot.
That's such a random lineup.
But does it just sound made up?
Oh,
it was the, what was it called? It was called, there's a name for the tour. I think it was something to do with hell. Of course it was something to do with hell. I can't remember, but yeah, it was brilliant. I remember we were by the right speaker on the side, so I came out on the right side of me was deaf. But quality, absolutely quality. What System of a Down track would you have covered then if you had to?
Oh, we've discussed this a lot. Because, with Vermillion, it was like, well, it's kind of like artsy and weird. And again, there's things about that song that's like, I wish they'd done this. So then we just did. And we covered it, but as for System of a Down, like, we still discuss it now. I'd love to do Question, because I mean, we both really love we love Mesmerize and Hypnotize. I know they kind of get a bit of a bad rap, but like, they're two of the greatest albums I've ever heard, and like, there's so much I love all the earlier stuff. Like, I love, just stuff like War is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to do something like that. But the thing is, like, I mean, even when we were discussing the Slipknot one, my three suggestions were Vermillion, Disaster Piece, or Get This. I was really gunning to Get This, but then it was like, how the hell am I going to play that and scream it at the same time and like keep my breath? And it's like, there wouldn't have been anything we could have done with it. Like, I do still kind of wish we'd done it, because it's my favorite Slipknot song.
Yeah. But
yeah. It was a thing of like, just what would suit us best. And I think Vermillion came out really well, but, and so something like Question by System, which is a bit more, it's got the strange acoustic guitar intro.
Yeah.
It's got that really fast section, though. That would suit you guys well.
Yeah, I'd love to do something like that. But yeah, there's always going to be a part of me that's like, okay, do the artsy fartsy thing. And then there's always going to be the other side of me that's like, nah, just do Sugar. Like,
well, that's what's great about Myra as well, isn't it? It's kind of, you've got all those big kind of, those sections where it isn't going kind of balls to the wall. And that's what, all that space, that's what makes that album so great. So it's, I think it's important that you have that arty stuff.
Yeah, have you heard the back to System of a Down, have you heard the Avril Lavigne cover of Chop Suey?
What?
Oh God, why do you have to bring that up?
Have you heard it?
I have, yeah. I remember what in the day.
What? This exists.
It's not like, I think you can only, it's on YouTube, and I think someone's just, it sounds like they recorded it on a phone or something. I won't even go into it. We'll move on, but it's worth a listen. Have a listen when you get off this. It's brilliant.
Oh, my God. Is it as bad as that Puddle of Mud Nirvana cover?
I'd probably say it's worse, to be fair.
I can't imagine it, so I'm going to have to go and watch it in a bit. should we do some questions from Instagram? Because we had quite a few, didn't we?
Yeah. So, we had quite a few people get in touch.
Sweet.
Go on, G, I'll let you ask the first one.
All right, so Black Snake Moan, I'm assuming it's Black Snake Moan, it's BLK Snake Moan, unless it's just BLK Snake Moan, asks, what was the reason for the tuning that you use in Conjurer, and what band got you into metal?
So the reason for the tuning is Mastodon, plain and simple. Their tuning is D standard, and then they drop it down to drop C, and then they drop that even further down to A. So they're essentially in three different tunings, while the guitar, the top five strings are always the same. And
so the bottom string is down to A, but the rest are in D standard.
Yeah.
So, ah, cool.
I'm glad you know what that means, Kieran.
So you can play D standard, drop C, and A, G, C, F, A, D, all with only moving one string. I just loved that idea of just kind of, well, we can play in three different tunings with only changing one string.
Yeah.
But then to be even cooler, we dropped that down half a step.
Yes.
Yeah, and Architects use that same tuning. I know Alter Bridge have used it a few times. There's a fair few bands that have used that format of tuning. Yeah, it's essentially a seven-string tuning, but you're the sixth string. So when you do like a power chord shape, it just makes an octave, and like bands like Torch and Neurosis have variations as well. And it's just kind of a cheap way of having your guitar sound really, really low without having to screw with the, you know, the truss rod and the
amp. Spend 20 minutes tuning the strings between each song.
Yeah. So, and yeah, me and Brady, we'd been in like metalcore bands and stuff before. Mm. And, you know, it's kind of, okay, yeah, so we're in drop C, and we play the kind of riff, just chugging in between every note. And yeah, it was just like, oh, dude, this, you know, we want to write like some doomier, heavier stuff. This tuning works for that. And yeah, we just stuck with it. And we've always talked about like, oh, should we try this tune there? But we primarily just stuck with that one. We've got like drop A sharp as well, but like, something about that tuning, it's just really ingrained in us now. It's without sounding like arrogant or anything, it just feels like our tuning.
Cool. Blast Beats X Hummus, who followed us today, I sent this guy a message actually, because me and Graham are both vegan, so we live off hummus. So we had to message him like, Blast Beats and hummus, that's our favourite thing. This might be a Peep Show reference, I don't know. But he wants to know, what's Conjurer's secret ingredient?
I don't think that is a Peep Show reference, but...
Is it crime?
Oh, yeah, there we go. Oh, God, I've missed it. I've missed the reference. Right, yeah.
Interview over.
Hosted by my own petard. But yeah,
I don't know, what is it? What, maybe the secret ingredient is that bottom string tune really low.
Yeah
it is. Yeah, we're cheap.
Okay. JG Visuals asks again, this I don't let's just read it. If a shark and a bear had a fight, who would win? I mean, honestly, surely that depends on where the fight's taking place.
I was thinking, right? This, because if the bear is in the shark's habitat, then the shark has got an advantage and vice versa. But these are important questions that we need to think about.
We do.
The thing is, a bear is like, they can get you on land and in water, whereas the shark can have you in water. So I'd have to say bear. I'm going with bear.
Yeah, I'm leaning that way as well.
The shark's got the bigger bite, obviously, but if a bear can, like, you know, move around that, and like, I don't know, that's a tough one, because I would imagine a bear's claws, like, shark skin's quite tough, so would a bear's claw, I mean, if they can tear a human face off, I'm sure he would have no problem.
We don't know what type of bear either. It could be a polar bear. A polar bear, I imagine, would be better in water than, you know, your average black bear that one would see.
What type of shark? What if it's a hammerhead shark or a tiger shark?
Or a loan shark?
Wonga shark.
If the shark has... if the shark is just like... Say the bear dives into the water and the shark's like mouth open already, boom, he's done. The bear's over with. But if the bear like gets the jump on him, like, I don't know, say the shark's going on, like going past him and the bear jumps on top, I think the bear's going to absolutely smash that one.
I've just got this image of a bear jumping off a cliff into the sea, like elbow dropping onto a shark or something. There's some subject matter for the new album.
Yeah.
Wow. Right, okay. Oh, your turn. I asked that one. No, you asked that one. It's my turn.
No, I
asked. Back off, Graham. It's my turn. Keck.jpg. How much of a joke is the enthusiasm for Carly Rae Jepsen?
Literally zero joke. We fucking love her. She's amazing. We all went to go see her. This February is the last gig I ever went to.
Nice. We were talking about this before you came on, and I was like, I hope it is real, because we talk all the time about, like, well, we were saying the other day, we were recording the intro for the episode with Dan Franklin. We were talking about how we actually emailed Kelly Clarkson's PR people the other week to see if we could get her on the show.
Amazing.
But with, like, it wasn't just as a joke. We both love her Breakaway album, so we thought, how good would it be to get her on and actually have a discussion about the album and why, you know, two metal fans enjoy that album? She hasn't replied yet. I mean, well, they haven't replied, but, you know, they probably will. We'll give it another week or so.
That's the point. Fuck System of a Down. I want to cover Breakaway. That's an absolute tune.
Yeah, man. But it's true, though, isn't it? I think there's this thing where, like, obviously this question exists maybe because I think some people think that people who enjoy metal or heavy music don't listen to other stuff. And, yeah, it's just, you can like everything. It's not mutually exclusive.
Like, for us, I mean, we play metal all the time. It's fucking boring to listen to. So,
are you into Smooth FM at all?
I can't say I am, no, but...
You need to give that a blast. Yeah.
Do you know, though, when we spoke to... we had Gordon, the drummer from Raging Speedhorn, on a couple of episodes, and he was talking about how they never, ever listen... Like, he barely listens to any kind of heavy music home, but he was saying in the tour bus... All they play is like 80s bangers. That's it. Just in the Speedhorn tour bus.
It's the way to go. I love this story. We were playing Glasgow on our headline tour last year, end of last year. And the Brady was just like, look, I've set up like a Spotify playlist, chuck in whatever you want, just so long as it's not a downer. And we just, it just goes from like ABBA to fucking System of a Down. To Turbo Wolf.
Oh, nice.
To like, and just like, and there was, we were in Glasgow and Carly Rae Jepsen was playing over the speakers. And some guy goes up to Dahi, our sound guy, and it's just like, turn it off. And Dahi goes, no. No, seriously, like, what? Why are you playing this? Turn it off. And he's just like, you know, the band fucking requested this. Like, this is their playlist. Like, you bought a ticket to their show. You signed up for this sort of thing.
There needs to be some small print in there somewhere if you buy a Conjure ticket that you might be subjected to a bit of Carly Rae or...
You will hear Robbie Williams. At least four Robbie Williams songs are in that playlist.
Would you be interested in doing a split EP with Carly Rae Jepsen? Some kind of collaboration? That would be... I can't even imagine how good that would sound.
Are you kidding? Obviously I would do that. That would be the best thing in the world. We'd fuck it up. We would just like blur out whatever shit we're doing just so we can hear the new Carly Rae Jepsen material.
Well, listen, me and Graham are in with these major label PR people, so once we get Kelly on, we'll work our way in and we'll set it up for you.
Oh, amazing. Yeah,
when you say in with these PR people, what do you mean? Because we haven't had a response yet.
It doesn't mean you're not in with them. I texted my gran the other day and she hasn't replied. It doesn't mean I'm not in with her.
Oh, okay. Next question is from Doug McD. I think you may have kind of answered this one earlier, but their first question is, favourite song to perform live? I know you said that kind of changes. And the second question, is favourite song written on the new album so far, which I don't know, you may not be able to answer, I don't know.
favourite, we ask ourselves this a lot because, as you say, it changes. Favorite song currently, I don't know. Wretch is usually one of them, just because it's the kind of energetic peak of the set, and we usually drop it kind of maybe around the middle, maybe two thirds in sometimes. But usually like quite knackered, and it's just a thing now that, like, because we never have set lists. I think for our first show, we had a set list. And after that, it was all just like, we'd decide like 5 minutes before and just do our best to remember. nice. It's often that we'll be like halfway through a set and I'll turn around to Jan. And usually when I turn around to Jan, he's about to say, it's Wretch. Oh, for God's sake. And we just do this sort of like slump because it's like it's tough to play, it's tough to keep up with, and there's a lot of energy in it, but that's why it's so good. Like, just getting through it is, it's a lot of fun. It can be challenging sometimes, especially like if because we're still not very used to playing, like, you know, headline shows or anything like that, playing any longer than, you know, 40, 45 minutes. So when we're playing like every single song we've written and Blood and Thunder, and we drop catch like towards the end, it's just like, oh God. But it's, yeah, I do love that song. Like, sometimes it is just the short, sharp ones that they just stick with. Like, I love it.
Cool. Leo Chong _ asks, who/what do you cite as your main influence as a band? I'd like to know what influences you as well as, yeah, who. Peep Show.
Yeah, Peep Show and Carly Rae Jepsen, they're the biggest two. And Alan Partridge. It's hard to say. I get, like, when me and Brady got together, it was a lot of me showing him a lot of doomier stuff. Probably the band, there's a lot of bands I could mention, like Converge and Mastodon and stuff like that, but honestly, like, the band that has kind of stuck there all the way through is Armed for Apocalypse. With this band from Chico, California. Shout out Nick Harris, doing nerd shit as he would be. But he drove us. He's the drummer for Armed, and he drove us on the two American tours we did, which was really bizarre. Because it's like, here's the drummer of like the band that made our band possible. Like, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be doing it. Like, wow. And then they've got two albums out. They've got the first one, Defeat, I discovered in college, and hearing it was just like, just one of those albums that just completely changes your entire perspective on music and what you like and what you're influenced by and stuff. Like, the band that did it. And whenever I would like help my mates' bands out, like if I was driving them to a show or something like that, Armed for Apocalypse would be on, and I, or if it wasn't, I would put it on and be like, everyone shut the fuck up and listen to this band. And it just became this thing that I would just show everyone Armed for Apocalypse, and it just kind of seeped into everyone. Yeah, they're the one that I have to mention. Like, we'd probably still be going if it wasn't for Converge or Mastodon or whatever, but we absolutely would not be a band if it wasn't for Armed for Apocalypse.
That's cool, man. I don't think I've actually even heard them.
I haven't.
I'll
check them out.
I'll give it a listen, yeah.
Man, they're amazing.
So, Raul59209, not Raul59208.
No, we blocked him.
Yeah. They ask, how did you learn to scream so nice?
And he's written that N-O-I-C-E.
Yeah.
It's the only way it's spelled.
Of course.
I didn't really. I mean, I screamed a bit in like previous bands. The first band I was ever in, there was no screaming. The second one, it was a bit of singing, a little bit of screaming. It was really, I kind of learned through just doing it all the time with Gundra. Before that, like, I liked to think I could scream, but I'm way more confident in my voice now. And it is just kind of like, when me and Brady first started hanging out and jamming and stuff, when it got to the discussion of like, right, so we need to find a bassist and a drummer, like, what we're going to do for vocals. I remember just saying to Brady, like, I kind of want to give it a go. Like, I never really wanted to be a front man or anything like that. I wanted to just be side stage playing guitar in my corner, and that'd be that. But I just wanted to give it a go. Like, it had been a while, like, at the time when we hooked up, neither of us were in metal bands. Brady was in a pop punk band, I was in a covers band. And it had just been a while since we'd really done anything we really liked, like the stuff we wanted to do. So, yeah, we were just like, fuck it, let's both give it a go. Brady wanted to try it. I wanted to try it. And when we kind of got into the practice room, it was kind of like, I heard Brady's like banshee wail, and it was like, holy shit, like, okay, yeah, this works. And I think, you know, I don't want to put words in his mouth. Maybe he kind of heard what I did and was like, yeah, okay, we're sorted.
So was it kind of trial and error, like when you started, you know, I'm going to start screaming, were you kind of basing it on bands you'd heard before or just kind of seeing what came out and then, yeah, how does that work?
I remember the first time I ever tried screaming, I was in school and I remember my mate just texted me and was like, my mum's gone out, so the house is free. Learn how to scream.
Do you want to come round and scream?
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, and it was like, yeah, let's do it. So we literally just, he had this like kids toy, this X Factor karaoke thing. You put the CD on, like, there's two microphones. And we just had a microphone each and we would just put on like Spit It Out by Slipknot and be trying to rap all the screaming. But the thing is that we're like 15-year-old kids just yelling the words. And we did that. And we just like, we were just really into it. We sucked, but we were just really into it. And then, you know, eventually I get in a band and I do a little bit more. And then I get in another band and do a little bit more. And it was just kind of, yeah, just constantly on and off. And then Kundry was the first time it was like, okay, like we're front men now. We actually have to do this. And, you know, there were things like we'd find ourselves kind of getting a bit hoarse after shows and stuff like that. And we played Euroblast a couple of years ago and this dude was like giving out free screaming coaching lessons. And so he just sat in the van and he just taught us like a few tricks and stuff like that. And we're just constantly like, you know, trying to look after our voices. We always drink like teas that are good for the vocal cords and that. And, you know, basically it was only really like since Maya came out that we were like doing warm-ups and cool downs before and after every show. And that's definitely helped a lot, especially when, you know, we're doing fucking like 5 weeks in the States. Like I was terrified. I was like, my voice is going to be gone after like 5 days. Like, what the fuck are we going to do? And amazingly, we both just trounced through it. There'd be times when like, you know, we'd be struggling for a gig or two, but like we just powered through it. And like, it's nice that that isn't a worry anymore. It's nice to know that we, you know, we have control of it. Like we aren't, you know, 15-year-old kids just screaming in their parents' bedroom.
Yeah.
More like we've got a grip on it. Like it's cool.
It's interesting that that's the case because there's this thing about, I think a lot, you know, people who maybe aren't listeners, regular listeners of heavy music kind of just think that screaming is something that just, you know, it's kind of this uncontrolled thing that just is just bloody noise. But then there's also the kind of, I have seen these vocalist coaches, there's like loads of them on YouTube.
The Zen of screaming. And
they're always like, yeah, they're always like really like older women and they're always like classically trained. Cause I guess it doesn't matter ultimately what music you're into or what your background is because they're teaching people how to kind of use their vocal cords properly if they're going to do that. But yeah, that's really interesting.
Well, that's the thing. It's not like screaming as in, I don't know, someone's just mugged you and you're chasing after them, are you? That's just shouting, isn't it? screaming is, you know, in music is, it takes skill, doesn't it? You know, you don't see someone running after someone doing a death metal growl, do you?
That's so weird that's your first point of reference. Well, like screaming, someone mugging you.
That's the only thing I can think of. When would you scream at someone? I don't know.
Like really high pitched. We have one last question.
We've got two last questions.
Oh, do we?
They're not really questions, though. I think these might just, I don't know what they are. Harden Maringer sent us a question that was just the devil horn emoji, the tongue out emoji, and then the devil horn emoji. I don't know what your response to that is.
Come on, Dan. You got to do better than that, man. Answer it properly. Answer it properly.
Maybe it's a riddle. We've got to guess the sequence. It'd be another tongue out emoji. Yeah. And then Bit Rock and Roll said, I love rock. You? I'm guessing you don't.
No. No, I do.
Yeah.
As well.
Like, excellent.
A couple of those questions I didn't, they asked like two questions, I didn't answer them properly. In terms of bands that got me into metal, Metallica and Faith No More, there you go. And favourite song off the new record, I don't know how to say, because we've got stupid titles for them at the minute. One of them's called Chong Sui.
I saw that on your Facebook page. Yeah, the working titles or whatever they are.
One of them's called, in every sense, Dan. there's one we've got called Grape Stomping. That seems to be a favourite at the minute. That's the first one that we actually wrote for the record. And that's like it's got to be over a year old now, that one. But yeah.
Is that titled after the viral YouTube video?
Kind of, yeah. Because we were just like, it was kind of, so it was the first song where, it's the first song we wrote for the record, and it wasn't even necessarily with the record in mind. It was just a song that was kind of being written, and then it was like, oh yeah, we've got another album to do. But Jan always comes up with these just weird, like, working titles. I think it's his main source of enjoyment with this band. it was like, the song was like 8 minutes long, and it's like very obviously more kind of folk influenced, and there's all sorts of like kind of twists and turns and stuff in it, and like we were just like, what's this song like? Because it's like these really heavy, horrible bits, but like also it's like really sweet and lovely. And he was just like, yeah, it's like, you know, Grape Stomping, when people get in those barrels and they just stamp on grapes all the time. It's like, it's a really violent act, but it's a really sweet thing that's actually happening. And it was like,
Great stomping.
Excellent.
That'll be a good one.
Have you got a rough date for the? Have you got like even a rough like kind of release window for the second album?
Well, COVID's kind of fucked us with that. The general idea was going to be to record for November, December. I think we initially had November booked. Like solid the whole month, and then this hit, and it was like, well, everything's up in the air. Like, you know, gigs probably aren't going to even happen for the best part of a year. So it was kind of that just became up in the air, and it was kind of like, well, let's just focus on writing, not think about it too much. So like intermittently we come back and chat about it. And now I think we're talking January. But this is the thing, like, as much as, again, obviously the pandemic's awful, like it's kind of worked for us in a way, because obviously it's given us the time to really knuckle down and write. Whereas other people would be, you know, rope burn and festivals and getting distracted and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As well, it's kind of, let's be honest, it's a great excuse to not come up with an album sooner rather than later. Yeah. You know, we're demoing and stuff, so like progress is coming along, but it is just like locking things in and booking things. It's like there's only, you know, nothing set in stone anymore. It's just, It kind of sucks, but like we're working around it. Everything's, you know, it's step by step.
Yeah, well, we're really looking forward to hearing it. And thanks for giving us your time and coming on and having a chat with us. It's been top speaking to you.
Yeah, no worries, man. It's been a good laugh.
Yeah, cool. So hopefully, late this year, beginning next year, we'll see a new album. But if not, check out Maya, check out Kirsty's Metal Hands. And thank you again for coming on.
And Carly Rae Jepsen.
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Definitely Carly Rae Jepsen. More so than us.
Well, there you go. That was Dan Nightingale, frontman of Midlands-based metal band Conjurer. And what a lovely guy. What a sound lad Dan was.
Yeah. I feel like I'll have a beer with this guy sometime. Actually, that's a bit creepy. I've never met him. That sounds a bit weird. But
just going to go around his house at like 2 in the morning and knock on his door.
Going to go around his house at 2 in the morning and fix his roof tiles.
I've got some tins.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that, yeah. And a big shout out to Dan for coming on. And, well, Conjurer, we're waiting on a new album, but Maya is out now, so check that out.
Yep, and their collaboration with Pine, Kirsty's Metal Hands, both really good. And their collaboration with Palm Reader. And Yeah, two great covers from Conjure on that as well.
Yeah, sick cover of Blood and Thunder, which is possibly one of the best songs of all time.
It is a great song. Yeah. But thank you for listening. As always, let us know what you thought on our social media channels. And we'll see you for... Well, we won't see you. That'll probably be a bit creepy.
We'll feel you.
We will feel your presence on episode 8.
Okay.
Thanks, Kieran. Thanks for coming.
Look forward to feeling you later.
Thanks for being there.
Bye, Graham. You go back to the park now.
All right. See you in a bit.
Ta-ra.